Good evening, I'd like to call this meeting to order. Today is Tuesday, February 3rd, 2015, at 6:30 p.m. We're at the Palm Coast Community Center for the regularly scheduled meeting of the Palm Coast City Council. Would you please rise and join me in a pledge of allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Roll call, please.
Mayor Nenz.
Here.
Vice Mayor McGuire.
Here.
Councilmember DiLorenzo.
Here.
Councilmember Nobile.
Here.
Councilmember Shipley.
Here.
Mayor, all members are present.
Thank you very much. First item on our agenda is the approval of the minutes of the January 20th Council meeting, the January 27th Council workshop, and the January 27th Council special workshop. Are there any additions, corrections, or is there a motion for approval?
Move approval.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries without objection. Agenda item number two, a resolution approving a work order to Singhoffen and Associates for stormwater modeling and stormwater management master plan for Palm Coast Sections 1 and 2. Mr. Landis.
Mayor, City Council, this is something we do every other year. And then when we complete the modeling, which is our way of planning for improvements to try to make sure that our stormwater systems maintain at its designed level to prevent flooding, we like to report the results of the last areas that we have done this study. So tonight you're asked to move forward the next two sections 1 and 2, but also hear the results of our study in sections 30 and 34. Now, what does that mean to anybody? Well, Juan will take it from here and introduce our guest engineer and tell you about the details. So, Juan, take it from here.
Thank you, Mr. Landon. Good evening, Mr. Mayor, Councilwoman, Councilmen.
Good evening.
We're here to present the results for the drainage study for sections 30 and 34, section 30 being part of the R section closest to Belterre and north of Rimfire Drive, and section 34, which is all of the E section here in Palm Coast. Here with me is our consultant, Mr. Mark Trillo with Singhoffen and Associates. And like the resolution says, it's for the next two sections, which is sections 1 and 2, which are part of mostly the F section, portion east of Florida Park Drive and another portion west of Florida Park Drive as well. First, we'll explain how we approach the modeling as far as prioritizing. We do visual inspections of the aging infrastructure. Most of the infrastructure in Palm Coast was put in the late 70s, of course. We developed a pipe rating system, from worst to best. And then we also have historical records of rainfall events. Every time we have a major rainfall, we always record data for that particular event, visual inspections, wherever Public Works put out high water signs. We also look at service orders from our citizens, which are in the form of complaints. And we also look at other special situations, such as high groundwater. We compile all of this data together, and with that data, we decide on which sections are in need of the priority as far as which section we're going to model first and last. The worst sections, of course, going first. We have 44 sections in Palm Coast, and as you can see, we've modeled six of them already. And as you can see, sections 1 and 2, which are the F sections, those are going next. Here is a map also showing here what was modeled, a visual representation of it. Here we have the L section, which is section 37, the B section, which is section 35. Our very first sections were 9 and 35, 9 being part of the F section. These are the two sections that are on the resolution tonight, 1 and 2. Section 30, which is part of the R's. Section 31, which is another section of the R section. And then all of section 34, which is the E's. Here I actually upgraded the map to include some of the work that we actually completed. we call this one here the Richie Lou Run. That was a significant project here. We did part of a tributary or a ditch line here in Section 35, and we're actually working on this one here now in Section 37, which we call tributary number two, or ditch line number two. We have two other projects that will be going on in Section 37 as well, but they haven't begun yet, but we have started this one. Now I will turn it over to Mark for the technical part of the presentation.
Thank you, Juan. As Juan said, we've been hired to prepare models for the city system. We've been working in sections for the last, I guess, 5 or 6 years or so. And this is kind of giving you an idea of, first of all, the kinds of events, storm events, that you all have had in the city and what we use to try and evaluate the results that our stormwater model gives us. For instance, back in May 2009, you had just about a 300-year storm. It's a little bit hard to estimate that because, quite literally, it's off the charts, so to speak. And then late last year, you had another 18 inches or so over about 2 days, which equates to just about a 200-year event. We use that kind of information to run our model and check the results that we get from the model to compare against what was actually measured in the city so that we can evaluate the results we're getting from the stormwater model and make sure it's giving us the kind of answers that we expect. And then we'll take that model and move on to a design phase where we actually evaluate retrofits to kind of correct some of the flooding problems that you have. In the May 2009 storm in Section 30, that's the R section, we saw a number of high water conditions reported that were right on the verge of going in people's houses, and roadway overtopping at a number of locations throughout that particular section. Again, the model results that we came up with confirm those types of conditions. So we feel really good about the model that we've developed to date. Section E, similarly, had some other flooding locations. Again, 4 homes were at risk of being flooded, although they did not quite flood. Roadway overtopping at multiple locations. And again, the stormwater model results are predicting that type of a flood condition. The first step after we develop the stormwater model for the existing conditions is to evaluate the level of service. And we've come up with this grading scale that you see here to kind of evaluate the function of the drainage system. We'll start with a service level A, where the water is contained within the ditches and the canals. You don't have any kind of road overtopping or road flooding. The next level down is a level service B. This is kind of the target that we're trying to achieve with all the different improvements that we're designing. It's a condition where the water level gets out of the ditches and out of the canals and into the roadway, but not up into the yards. It stays contained within the right-of-way. Level C, we get a little bit higher than that, and water starts spreading up into folks' yards. And then level D is where we actually get into homes themselves, structure flooding, that kind of thing. As I said, the objective is to try and reach a level of service B for the entire system. C is considered deficient, and then D obviously is very deficient. When it comes to evaluating home flooding itself, we actually look at the 100-year storm, and the city ordinance requires what's called a foot of freeboard. Freeboard is basically a buffer or a depth or distance between the actual water level and a finished floor elevation. So as we see here in the diagram, we've got a water level. It's gotten out of the right-of-way. It's gotten up into the yards, but it's still a foot or more below the elevations of the houses. And that's kind of the target. This is Section 30. It's the results of our level of service evaluation. And essentially, everything that you see that is a red dot up in here and over in here our level of service C's. That's where your flooding has gotten out of the road right away and up into people's yards. A's are contained within the system. So the majority of this area, with the exceptions of these red dots, are acceptable. And this is kind of a summary of Section 30. The majority of these locations are flooding primarily because the areas of the development are rather low relatively speaking, compared to the canal elevations. In addition, the roadway elevations are kind of lower than they really should be. We predict two homes will flood during the 100-year in Section 30, and that 1 foot of freeboard requirement that I mentioned just a minute ago, 19% of the homes in this section do not meet that requirement at this point. And we've got a number of locations where secondary drainage deficiencies, that's that level of service C, exist. And then we've also classified eight locations that flood during a two-year event. Your requirement is a 10-year event, so these are roads that flood on a very frequent basis. This is just kind of a reiteration of the level of service, and we're highlighting the areas that are the focus of the design effort for the contract that we were just completing. And you'll see these are the same locations that we had those red dots at. This is Section 34, the E section down by the golf course. And again, the majority of this area actually looks pretty good with the exception of these two localized areas right here and right here. And you can tell from looking at the blue shading, which is basically generating or showing you the 100-year floodplain, that this area here has a lot of involvement, street flooding and similar type of conditions. It tends to be a low area overall compared to other areas that are located between that spot and the actual outfall. And this is your Eisenhower Canal that goes up to the Royal Palms Canal. This is Belterre Parkway. And again, the high water levels tend to be a result or a combination of low grades and constrictions between those locations and the canal system. No homes are predicted to flood in this area for the 100-year storm, although you do have 18% of the homes in the system that do not meet that 1 foot of freeboard. Four locations are insufficient or deficient for the 10-year storm, and you have a lot of crossings that flood on a fairly frequent basis. And again, this is a summary in map form of those two locations and the deficiencies that we've identified.
After the model is done, Singhoffen actually recommends certain alternatives to improve upon the model that was performed. And with those improvements, for example, they would look at, you know, expanding a ditch here or adding a pipe or what have you. In this situation here, we looked at expanding this ditch, and in lieu of, because of the water levels in Eisenhower, we would actually need to pipe the water along Belterre and get it to Royal Palms directly along on the downstream end of the Weir R1. And I'm sorry. So with that situation here for Section 34, that would account for these costs, that estimate of actually performing the work, not in-house, but if we sent it out to bid. Section 30, with the seven locations that you saw on the map, that estimate came out to be a roughly $370,000, and that's mostly ditch expansion and some piping involved. The sign on the corner of Rimfire and Belterre, that sign actually is one of the causes of some of the restrictions associated with some of that high water levels in that area. So we would actually look at it would be a twofold project, and perhaps creating a new sign there and rerouting the drainage around it to improve that situation. Let's go. Here we have some pictures of some of the work we've actually completed here in the R section. We affectionately call this the Richie Lou Run. This job was from Richardson Drive to Richmond Drive. It involved six crossings where we actually resized the pipes across the road. And we expanded the ditches. and that this area is actually, this has helped significantly in this area. One thing we will note that this is phase one of the ultimate solution of this particular area. Phase two would be to create a ditch that went in the back of the Ralph Carter Park and the Rimfire School and eventually popped off underneath Royal Palms Parkway to Royal Palms Canal. That would be phase two of this particular project. This is the work that we completed in the B section. Call this tributary 3035 number two. And this involved ditch and pipe modifications, and this goes from Bunker Hill to Burnaby Lane. As you can see, our engineer's estimate here is $220,000. Our construction costs actually ended up being $145,000. We were able to perform this project in-house with our Public Works Department. And this is a project that's going on now in the L section. This is a ditch line 37-2 or tributary 37-2. And this is a fairly long run of a ditch line, a little over half a mile. And it runs from Lindsay Drive all the way to Lansing Lane. And we have three of these tributaries or ditch improvement projects to do in section 37, the L section. And these tribs are actually phase one of ultimately a phase two, a necessary phase two of the project, which is the creation of storage, 100 acre feet of storage to be exact. Once we create that storage somewhere in the system, that should ultimately help out with the high water levels in section 35 and 37. Section 37 and 35 are connected under the Matanzas Wood Parkway. Okay, current and future work. This is just a summary of where we're at right now. We're here, you see the future work here. We're going to go ahead and do sections one and two. Current work here that we're estimating, you saw that earlier, $370,000 for section 30, $240,000 for section 34. It's also permitting costs as well. We actually do the design for the construction in-house. We do that all in-house. Sing often helps us with the permitting, so we do definitely have some savings there. And this is what I talked about here with Section 31, Phase 2, the major ditch that has to go behind the park and the school and end up at Royal Palms Parkway. That's fairly significant right there. And then also Section 35 and 37, the creation of the extra storage that we would need, 100 acre feet to be exact. You could go ahead and chime in.
Sections 30 and 34, like Juan said, we're wrapping that up. This is your slide.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm sorry. I thought that was well. Okay. Well, yeah. Section 30 and 34, we're pretty much finalizing the design alternates that we're going to do. We actually have a survey that began late last month, so hopefully we should have all that survey in by the middle of this month. Like I said, all of our design work is done in-house. Once we get all our survey in, we look at the data and we formulate a design. We send the design to Singhoffen, who checks the model to see if the design that we did will actually help and alleviate the problems. What we've learned mostly is that if we continue the maintenance and certain selective improvements, like where we have a pipe failure, if we have pipes that are near their useful life, if we continue with the swale rehab and ditch maintenance, it will definitely reduce the future capital costs that are coming up. So
I think that's it. Yeah. That would be it.
Council questions?
Yeah, just a couple of simple questions. Mm-hmm. First, what did we do to reduce the number of homes below the 1 foot? I saw we reduced that from 19 to 16%. I think that's what I saw. How do we do that?
It's the improvements.
You either raise the house or you lower the water level.
You lower the water or you raise the house.
Okay.
And the minor, and quite frankly, the improvements that your staff has done to this point have been kind of on the minor side. You saw the $700,000 CIP that Juan referred to. That involves addressing the higher, bigger storm events. Most of the improvements, in fact, all the improvements we've done up to this point have been addressing the minor drainage systems, the ditches that you know, convey water out of the neighborhoods.
Okay.
And those improvements have dropped flood stages enough to where you get some of that back.
Okay.
Right. One other thing we need you to understand is, even though it said 19%, it dropped within the 1 foot of freeboard. So it could have actually been an inch within that foot of freeboard.
Oh, okay.
Still 11 inches.
Okay.
They're not like the water's 1 inch from their house, you know.
Right.
We have to be technically, you know, sound with the results. If it's within an inch of that freeboard, it's a percent. It becomes
okay.
A percentage.
It's added. Okay.
Right.
What in the 300 or 100 year event, how does that compare to, say, a tropical storm or hurricane-type event?
Those storms that you saw that we mentioned up there, those are typically systems, oftentimes slow-moving systems.
Yeah.
I think the one in 09, no, that Faye was in 08.
It was 09.
09, yeah.
It was
09.
Faye was 09?
No, Faye.
Faye was 08.
Oh,
Faye.
Yeah.
Faye's an example. It came across the state, it parked off the coast, and it just sat there.
Right.
And when systems move like that, you tend to see large volumes of rainfall, large amounts over long periods of time. In fact, the model that we're running is a 100-year, 24-hour storm, so it's about 11 or 12 inches in a day. Versus these storm events that occur over 3 to 5 days.
5 years. Okay. Because one of the things I was interested in is if these models could be used also to help us. It's been a long time, and I don't want to even say it, since we've had any hurricanes or tropical storms come through. And it would be nice in the event that that doesn't happen. But if it does, if we could use these models to be prepared for areas we may know are going to give us some big problems.
We actually have a plan in place. If we know a particular area where we have an issue with and we can see the storm coming, we would go ahead and lower certain canals to accommodate what we anticipate coming. Yeah, we have a plan in place.
Okay. That's all I have, Mr. Mayor.
Other questions?
Your Honor. One, we're asking the council to approve a work order for Singhofen. You presented a lot of data here as how much projects would cost and what the engineer's estimate is, but we're only considering how to pay Singhofen at this time.
Yes, for the model work for sections 1 and 2.
Okay. I want people to be confused with how much the project cost, because that's not their cost.
Right.
Other council questions? Seeing none, we'll open the meeting to the public. Anyone from the public wish to be heard on agenda item number 2? Come up to the podium, give us your name, and limit your contribution to 3 minutes. Anyone? Seeing no one approach the podium, we'll close the public portion of the meeting. Back to council. Additional questions, comments, or a motion?
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries without objection. Agenda item number 3, resolution approving the Grand Landings North pre-annexation and economic development agreement. Mr. Landon.
This is the next step in the Grand Landings development, which is off Seminole Woods in the airport donut hole, if you will, that area that's most of it is in Palm Coast now, but there's still some parcels that are isolated, and this was bring one of those into Palm Coast. This and the next item both are tied together. This is the agreement with the landowner. The next one is the actual ordinance. Bo's presentation is pretty short, but it actually covers both of those items.
Good
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Before you tonight, as Mr. Land stated, you have the pre-annexation agreement, which serves as this property owner's voluntary petition to annex into the city of Palm Coast. Along with the next item is the actual annexation ordinance to incorporate this within the city of Palm Coast. Florida Landmark Communities LLC is requesting annexation of approximately 255 acres of undeveloped property. And at this time, the city is going to take this opportunity to annex the 21 acres, better known as the Iroquois Canal, within the city of Palm Coast. The area is generally located south of the airport, west of Central Woods Parkway, and north of the development, better known as Grand Landings. It includes both property south of the Iroquois Canal and north of the Iroquois Canal. This property meets the standards set forth in Florida statutes for annexation. The planning considerations, generally, at this time, will keep the current county future land use and zoning, but the property owner will pursue both a future land use and zoning, and generally continuing the industrial development to the north of the canal and then to the south, more residential in nature, with the canal serving as the breaking point. With that, if there's any questions.
I have one. Since this property is not in the city now, I'm assuming that its future land use is not addressed in our flume?
No. This area, of course, you know, we did a airport area master plan back to plan around and in the airport, but until it is a city flume and zoning, all the property rights underneath with the county designation remain until that time, which the city flume is applied in the zoning.
Council questions? Seeing none, open the meeting to the public. And from the public, we should be heard on agenda item number 3. Seeing none, approach the podium. We'll close the public portion. Get back to council. Additional questions, comments, motion.
Move approval of agenda item number 3, a resolution approving the Grand Landings North pre-annexation and an economic development agreement.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries without objection. Agenda item number 4, an ordinance, the Grand Landing North annexation. Since our attorney, Mr. Reichman, is not with us this evening, Mr. Landon, would you please read this into the record, please?
Okay.
It's a long one.
Wasn't ready for this. An ordinance of the city council of the city of Palm Coast, Florida, to annex property to be included within the corporate area of the and city limits of the city of Palm Coast upon adoption of this ordinance, providing for the annexation of approximately 276 acres of property generally located south of the Flagler County Airport, west of Seminole Woods Parkway, north of the subdivision generally known as Grand Landings, and east of the Quail Hollow section of Palm Coast. In the description in exhibits A1, A2, A3, and A4 to this ordinance, in line in the areas approximate to the existing city limits of the city of Palm Coast, Flagler County, Florida, providing for annexation in accordance with the voluntary annexation provisions of Section 171.044 Florida statutes, providing for annexation of real property, amend the corporate city limits, provide for rights and privileges resulting from annexation, effective annexation upon land uses, providing for effect on ad valorem taxes, providing for effect on business and occupations, providing for conflicts, providing for severability, providing for codification, and providing an effective date. Mr. Reichman is never to be absent again.
Mr. Landon, do you have anything you'd like to add, having done that marvelous recitation?
Now, the previous presentation addressed this item also.
Council, additional questions? Any from the public wish to be heard on agenda item 4, which is really a continuation of agenda item 3? Seeing no one approach the podium, we'll come back to council. Additional questions, comments, or a motion?
Move approval.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Roll call vote, please.
Vice Mayor McGuire?
Yes.
Councilmember DiLorenzo?
Yes.
Councilmember Nobile?
Yes.
Councilmember Shipley?
Yes.
Mayor Nets?
Yes.
Mayor, this motion passes 5-0.
Thank you very much. Agenda item number 5, appoint 4 members to the Leisure Services Advisory Committee. Now, this should be a tricky one, ladies and gentlemen, because there are four vacancies and there are four applicants. Is there a motion?
I move that we appoint, I apologize in advance for the names, Mary Gerullo, Dennis Hurley, Joy Bingham, and Stephanie Capetta.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries without objection. This brings us to the consent agenda, items 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Does anyone wish to remove anything from the consent agenda? But before you do, does anyone from the public wish to express any comments on any of these agenda items prior to City Council potentially removing some from the agenda? Comments on agenda items 6 through 10. No one approach the podium. We'll come back to City Council. Does anyone wish to remove anything from the consent agenda? Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented?
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries without objection. That concludes the business for this evening. This brings us to the public participation portion of the meeting. This is the opportunity for the public to speak on any item not on today's agenda. Please come up to the podium, give us your name, limit your contribution to 3 minutes.
Jack Carroll, Palm Coast. I just want to ask, I was reading in the paper about the red light decision in Hollywood, and I was just wondering how that's going to affect Palm Coast and our bank account.
We'll try to get you an answer. Next speaker.
Mayor, City Council members, I'm here to talk about Florida Park Drive.
Your name, please?
Rebecca Obst.
Thank you.
And I'm a Florida Park Drive resident. I've never attended one of the meetings before regarding this situation, but it is a big situation. And especially now that we're going to have the shopping center there, it's going to put more traffic on Florida Park Drive. Now that we have the new park that opened up down there, over by the yacht club, that also has already put a lot more traffic on Florida Park Drive. It's a very dangerous situation. It is just a really big tragedy waiting to happen. But I've done a lot of thinking about what we might be able to do, and maybe you guys have already thought about it. I don't know. But what if, instead of it being a thoroughfare, as it is now, because nobody goes by the traffic limit, most don't unless you live there, like I do. I watch it very carefully. We do have a lot of children, a lot of young people that walk up and down the sidewalk on my side of the street. But what if you, going down Florida Park Drive, when you get to the end at Palm Harbor, instead of having a right turn and a left turn, wouldn't it make sense to make that just a left turn and no right turn? If you go just a left turn, it doesn't stop you from Matanzas High School or getting to US 1 or Princess Place or to anything that goes to the left. There's gas stations down there, Matanzas High School, Princess Place, and then on down to US 1 off Old Kings Road. But to make a right turn, it takes you to the park and to Cimarron and all the streets down there. But there's two other ways to get there. You've got Old Kings Road that you can go down over to, what is that, Forest Grove, I believe, it turns into, and then it goes to Palm Harbor. They can go that way, or they can go down Palm Coast Parkway, which is being really a nice, a lot of work being done there, down to Palm Harbor, you know, that goes down by European Village, and then go on that way, instead of making that shortcut through Florida Park Drive, just by saying no right turn. It's not going to alleviate the whole problem, but it will cut down on it quite a bit if they go down there and they can only go left. That's the only solution I can come up with, and I think it's a pretty good one, and I don't know if you guys have ever thought about it, but something to think about.
Thank you very much. Next speaker.
Good evening. I'm Norman Reiskopf. Nice to be here.
I came primarily for the reason to tell you, give you a thank you for closing down the dog park and getting started on that work there. And I see things are starting to move along pretty nicely now, and you've made a lot of people very happy about that, and I'm happy about it also. So I know we spent many years trying to get a move on that dog park, and in particular the dog park, and now everyone sees that it's getting going, so we're real happy about that. And again, I want to say thank you. The other thing I came here for was to tell you that where I live on Riviera Drive near Rickenbacker, the litter problem is just atrocious. I don't know who's throwing the litter out, but you have beer cans and McDonald's wrappers and just everything along the swales over there, and it's really disgusting. I'm asking you if we can have a sign or two put up in that area to warn people not to litter anymore, with some kind of penalty if they do. And that's the only thing I can think of at this point, but I'm sure there might be other ways to alleviate that problem. But it's like living in New Jersey, in a sense.
Except there's no snow.
No snow, that's true. So that was the two reasons I came up here, was to say thank you for the getting started on the dog park and get this litter problem under control. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next speaker. Next speaker.
Hi. I also
pull the microphone down a little bit, please. Thank you.
Your name,
please.
Lori Krazak.
Thank you.
About Florida Park Drive. We bought our house there about a year and a half. And in a year and a half, I'm considering moving because of the traffic situation. I think to start, we should eliminate commercial traffic. A cement truck on a daily basis has been going down the road at least 40 miles an hour. There are a lot of children. It's hard to even walk your dog the way people are speeding. But at a minimum, maybe reduce the speed limit. I know you already have. And maybe eliminate commercial traffic on the road. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker. Next speaker.
Come on, Lewis.
Seeing no one approach the podium, we'll close the public portion meeting. Back to City Council. The first question had to do with the impact of the red light decision, I think, in District Circuit 4.
Four.
The short and simple answer is we don't know what the implications are. In essence, what the court has refused to reconsider is their position that local governments cannot contract out police-type services, which in this case would be the issuance of traffic violations based on red light cameras. I would speculate that there are a couple of options that a city could follow. They could take that process in-house, add additional employees, and do the work that you contracted out to some outside company. Conceivably, if that decision is upheld at the Supreme Court level, it could conceivably void contracts, that current contracts between vendors and cities. But the short and simple answer is, unless Mr. Landon, unless you have any other insights, it's still too early to tell what the impact is going to be.
Yes, I did have a conversation with Mr. Reichman today about it, and we are going to meet with ATS to see what their plans are and what kind of their opinion as far as the impact it has on our contract and the program. And then he's going to put together some options for City Council to consider and report for you to consider later. But with that decision just coming out. He doesn't have those yet, and we do need to confer with the other side of the contract, meaning ATS. But we've already talked about doing that. You've asked for us to bring something back to you as soon as the 4th District Appeals Court was completed, and it is, so we're working on that now.
Mr. DiLorenzo.
So this was one of the items we were kind of waiting for a resolution before we considered moving forward and having a judge review our contract. So I'm guessing you're going to meet with ATS, see what they think, and then Mr. Reichman will bring back some ideas, and if maybe now is the time to have a judge look at our contract or something else.
Yeah, we didn't get in that much detail in our conversation today, but you're right on target. That was one of the options, and I think he'll bring that back to you. We need to make sure what ATS's position is before
we still can, a lot of dollars on the table.
Yeah. So, but yes, that's one of those options of actually taking something to the court and say, okay, do we have a valid contract or not as a result of this action by the appeals court?
Mr. Mayor, if I can, what kind of time frame are we looking at? I personally. I don't want to leave this open any further. To me, the decision's been made. I don't want to wait for this to go to the Supreme Court because it may never get there. It may never get that high. They may refuse to hear it, and we've already got the ruling. So how long is it going to take for Mr. Reichman to put together some proposal of steps? And I would like to make sure we have a full spectrum. Not just what ATS thinks, but...
Well, absolutely. No, it's not what ATS thinks. It's where is ATS headed that
yeah.
we can then plug that into city decisions.
Right, because they said... I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No.
Because one of the things they said last time was, well, we'll write you a new contract.
Right.
That's one of the things they offered, right? Well, if we have to, we can enter into a new contract. So that may be where they come back with.
Right, but or they might say no, we refuse to do that. So then that takes that option off of the table, and then we go from there. But that's why, that's part of that due diligence. Mr. Reichman made it very clear that there was no reason to wait for any future court action at this time.
Okay.
So he is not planning on doing that. That's the only thing I got definitive out of him is now's the time to move forward with options we can. So there's no waiting for additional court action from what he told me today.
The issue of Florida Park Drive and the traffic, whether it be commercial traffic or residential traffic or traffic that is speeding, something that City Council has looked at a number of times, continues to look at, but every option that is presented to us has a downside. For example, in the discussion today, you route the traffic onto Old Kings Road and then have them use Forest Grove, which is a residential street, to come over to Palm Harbor. You're taking one person's problem and transferring it to someone else, coupled with the fact that in the not too terribly distant future, you will not readily be able to use Forest Grove as a cut-through because of the extension of Old Kings Road north to Matanzas Woods and the extension of Palm Harbor Parkway to Matanzas Woods, both of which going behind the high school, Forest Grove will no longer be, in all probability, a through street. So that option doesn't work well. But I can assure you it's something City Council is looking at. The idea of a left turn only lane, I've got to admit that's a new one. I haven't heard that one before. We have to look at the implications and what that does to traffic flow.
Your Honor, I'd like to weigh in on that.
Please.
Relative to left turn only at the end of Florida Park Drive, we should also consider that you cannot make a left turn onto Florida Park Drive from, Palm Harbor?
Palm Harbor. Right.
Yeah. And we've got traffic engineers who could look at that. Because, the long and short of it is if it looked like it might have some potential, we could always try it. We could make it happen, and then after 3 months, if we don't see any reason to continue it, we could go back to the way it is. But it might be worth a try. I'd like to have our traffic engineers weigh in on what they think about it, because I'm not a traffic engineer.
No, and one of the things that, I'd be curious to see is how much traffic on Florida Park is in fact through traffic, and how many vehicles are going to the the 30-some-odd residential streets that are really only accessible from Florida Park.
Well, you could measure that, putting one of those traffic counters in, at each end of Florida Park, and see of the ones that turned onto Florida Park from the main drag, how many are still there in the end.
I don't know how you differentiate between ones that turned on
you couldn't,
and ones that were coming out of the Fleetwood.
You couldn't for a short period of time, but if you extended the study for, say, a week, you ought to be able to see some kind of a trend.
Well, that would take physical counters.
I think so.
Would have to have people out there counting.
No, you can use the little electric lines across.
But you won't know if the person comes in. They could come in and come out, and then somebody else could go out the other way. You wouldn't know what car actually came through.
But that's why we have traffic engineers.
Exactly.
You get a picture of how many are turning on and how many are still there at the end of it.
May I, Mr. Rand?
Please.
One thing I would like to just state is I don't agree with the assessment that we're going to, if we help these people in Florida Park, that we're turning one person's problem into another person's problem. What we're doing is we're not taking all the traffic off of Florida Park and moving it somewhere else. We're just alleviating some of the traffic and moving it somewhere else. And if Frontier is a problem, then we need to add that in the plans for the future, because I hope we're not, my hoping is that we're going to grow. We're going to keep growing, and, you know, this is not something that's going to go away. So I believe we really do need to continue to look into this not just say we're going to look into it and flash a few ideas, but actually decide we're going to make or come up with some solutions. Like Mr. McGuire said, you know, let's put some things in place, see what happens.
You can try something. If it don't work, then go back to the way it was.
Yeah.
So but can we?
That's all I got to say about that.
Can we start something? My mic's not on. Can we start something that starts within the next couple of weeks, not something that we keep on talking about? There's one issue is the amount of traffic. The other issue is safety, because we do have a park going there, and there is no sidewalk on that other side. And the other thing is noise, which I had talked to Mr. Landon about a different road deck on there, see if we can make it quieter. Even if you have less cars, it's still a very loud street. We actually were at Holland Park today for another resident, and I could hear the cars all the way down Farrington. You could hear the Old Kings Road cars going down. So if we could do something, and I like the left-hand turn, and I think, though, that I don't want to put the other streets, the other side streets, that those streets which have no sidewalks, make them have more traffic, and then try to deal with that later, because there are no sidewalks there at all.
Mayor, if I could weigh in, I am impressed with the idea of left turn only.
Yeah.
That is a new one, and we can determine how many people are turning right versus left and coming out of there, and see if that would have, what kind of impact that would have. Those are kind of suggestions that our traffic engineers can take a look at. I mean, I get, because my message is, yeah, it feels like we've been talking, but for years we have been trying some different things, but always interested in new ones. So we will definitely have our traffic engineer take a look at that new idea and see what kind of impact they would predict if we did that.
Mr. Mayor, I have a comment for Mr. Weisskopf, actually.
You're jumping ahead.
No. He was the speaker in the middle. He
we
spoke
to the dog park, but go right
ahead. Oh, go ahead, please.
Go right ahead.
You
go right ahead.
I actually wasn't going to talk about the dog park. I was going to talk about Riviera, because I was on Riviera this afternoon about 4:45, and at Riviera and Riverview, I noticed the trash as well. Now, over the winter, when we don't mow as much, our crews don't have an opportunity to pick up the trash as much because they're mowing and they have the wand and they're picking up the trash, and that's why over during these months it seems it you see more trash. However, we have a gentleman, John Erpeldy, who comes to these meetings regularly. He lives around the corner there, and he picks up that trash. There is a bus stop there, and that's why we're having a lot of trash at Riverview, closest to Rim Fire is the entrance I'm talking about. I know there's at the other end as well.
So the school kids are the ones throwing beer cans in the...
No,
the kids.
Oh. Mr. Erpeldy has told me that it is the parents in the cars waiting for the school kids, and they toss it out the windows.
Well, I will attest, because I live in the R section, and not up towards Riviera, but down further, down Rim Fire, closer to Belterre. And we have the same... I walk my dogs with my... Of course, my little doggy bags, and I have one of those pouches with the stick, and you know, because we have a lot. I mean, it seems that where there are areas that are unpopulated, cars seem to, I'm not going to say who, but cars seem to park there overnight, or not overnight, but they hang out, let's say. You know, they'll find this spot, and they may or may not be with their girlfriend, and, you know, they're parked there. And then all of a sudden, everything goes out, you know, out the, you know, the McDonald's and all that stuff. And so I feel your pain, Mr. Weisskopf.
The problem, however, if I thought for a minute that putting up a no littering sign, $200 fine, would change behavior, I'd do it in a heartbeat. But you'll never convince me that somebody doesn't know that they're doing wrong when they throw wrappers and cans and bottles out of a car window. Putting a sign to tell them they're doing wrong, I don't think that's going to change behavior.
We already have a littering ordinance, do we not?
We do. The difficulty, like so many things, is how do you catch them? How do you enforce them?
Yeah.
It's a problem, and it's an unfortunate problem, and it's unfortunate that it seems to be prevalent in the R section.
Yeah.
But
I'll find
ask that. City staff to take a look when they're in the area.
Well, I can tell you what we do, and Mr. DeLorenzo is right on target, is that it's usually in front of the vacant lots, and we pick up the trash when we go out and mow, which is, you know, more during the summer, obviously, than during the winter. But that's when we go out and pick up the trash. So Mr. DeLorenzo is right on target at this time of year. But grass will start growing here shortly, and we'll be out there more often in the neighborhoods and picking it up. But the other thing is I do want to say that we have an Adopt a Street program, and there are a lot of people who are out picking up the trash, and I see that quite a bit, and I think those people should be commended for when they go for a walk, they take a trash bag and pick up after other people.
Thank you.
But Mr. Netz, you're exactly on target. The only thing I'd add to it, you put up a no litter sign, that becomes a target, and that will be where most people will throw their litter, what we find in this business.
Which that's is a sad commentary, but unfortunately.
Which is really disgusting. But it's,
get bullet holes in it.
And then shoot the sign, yeah.
That's right. Please. Okay. Mr. Weisskopf, thank you for the kind words about the dog park. The unfortunate thing is it's going to be closed, but there is light at the end of the tunnel. So one of those things that we're moving forward on. Discussion by City Council of matters not on the agenda. Ms. Shipley, why don't we start with you?
I do have one. I want to work on the next workshop on an ordinance that we had way back when. I think it was changed in 2008. For the privacy walls, or not privacy walls, people putting up privacy fences on the intercoastal. I have a couple that I went out to visit, and I think some of you also have gone out to visit them, and they live on the intercoastal. A neighbor has put up a fence that blocks their view. The couple is not looking for us to go there and say they have to take down the fence that's blocking their view, but has suggested that we put that ordinance back so that in the future, when you buy a house that's on the intercoastal with a beautiful view, there's no chance that somebody takes away your view. I think it used to be 30 feet back from the water that they had to build a fence, or they could build a fence.
Well, they had to step it down. You could have a fence all the way down, but you had to step it down as you got closer to the front yard and to the canal. But something we can certainly look at.
We have it in the plans right now. We're going to bring that forth to you. You know, we have to go through the legal process and review, but that will come to you. I believe it's going to be March is when you'll see that next month.
Mr. DiLorenzo.
Nothing.
Nothing,
Mr. McGuire. Well, we don't have a city attorney present to give us comments, so Mr. Landon, discussion by city manager of items not on the agenda.
I actually do have something to this week for Palm Coast is really the end of an era. Mr. John Moden, who has been working here for 37 years, is retiring. His last day is Friday. You know, John has actually helped build this community and was very instrumental. Expertise has always been stormwater and drainage, and although everybody hates the swells, when it comes to getting 16 inches of rain in an 8-hour period, I challenge any other community to be able to handle that. So John's one of those type of individuals that is impossible to replace because of his knowledge, and in fact he helped build this community and his institutional memory and those type of things. But one of my jobs is to attempt to do exactly that. And so the last few weeks I have been working with staff and it looked at, you know, what our talent is and what are our needs today. They're a little different than what they are all the time because we keep changing when development's up, development's down, and John is very much part of that. So I have made some structural changes in the organization that were being implemented this week, and then made a couple announcements on appointments. The structural change, first of all, Public Works right now is really divided into two major divisions, the utility and then what we call streets and drainage, which is really a misnomer because it includes street maintenance, drainage maintenance, park maintenance, facility maintenance, fleet, a fairly large operation itself. And so based on the size of that world we have here, I have decided to make that into its own department so that it actually is a department of its own. The other change is we have a small stormwater engineering department today that's a standalone that Mr. Moden has been the director. And with that position being empty, taking a look and working with our development staff, we have the, could say, the horizontal development. You know, we have the planning division, and then we have the building that goes vertical, and then we have the infrastructure, you know, the pipes that go in the ground, the streets, and that is where we saw very little happening, and when we made the major cuts a few years ago, that's really where we made significant cuts and cut out inspectors, et cetera. We're starting to see that pick up. Plus, we have three departments that really kind of get involved in that, and our own capital program. We have a capital program in stormwater and community development and utility. So all of those are kind of tied together, and we're going to create a division and pull all those together, better coordinated, and put that under community development so that we have the planning, then that horizontal capital infrastructure, and then the vertical building department, and have them closer together and, I think, more efficient in taking this opportunity. So the stormwater engineering department will become a division of community development. So we'll have same number of departments, same number of divisions, but just better reflect the reality of today. With the street and drainage superintendent position open, that also creates need to replace and make that, but that will be a director. I have asked Nestor Abreu to be the director of Public Works and take his management skills and expertise. He has background in engineering and construction, and be the new director in our Public Works department. That obviously opens up the directorship in community development. In community development, I've promoting Steve Flanagan, who is our construction manager and utility, to be a community development director. Steve has been here many, many years also, another one of those long-time employees in our utility, who has a background in construction, capital projects, and has good leadership skills and management skills that he's demonstrated. So he's being promoted as our new community development director. So just wanted to announce some of those exciting times, and I am really believe that this will help with the development review process and our capital program and make it more efficient, and then also just address our needs of today. So,
Mr. Landon, will you be presenting at next week's workshop a revised organizational chart, job descriptions, and performance measures?
The organizational chart, I got a revised one of those today.
Okay.
I just announced this to staff today. The community development director's position is in existence, so we're going to look at that, maybe tweak it a little bit, but it wouldn't be anything major on that. Public Works Director, a little bit different, and we're going to tweak that too. But those are kind of steps. We have some other things when you make these kind of structural changes that our departments and our teams are going to work on a lot of those details. But, Mr. McGuire, that's definitely part of it.
Yeah, because when you tweak somebody's job description, you also tweak their performance measures.
Yes, and we have we have all those already in place, and just had the year end come out this week.
Okay.
Different responsibility. Yes, that's all part of that, and that's things we got kicked off today. And very confident. That's the nice thing about the talent we have here and the tenure of these individuals. They understand our system and our. Already off and running, so excited about that.
As long as you're on the subject, was there any upshot to the FBI investigation?
First of all, you must be listening to the media, because I don't know that there's an investigation. We had someone that came and chatted with one of our employees. There's a big difference between having an investigation and having a meeting where they call and say, hey, we would like to talk to you. To tell you the truth, we have law enforcement come see us all the time. There are a variety of reasons why they come to see us because of what we're involved in day in and day out, and the fact that we work closely with the sheriff's office. I actually got a kick out of that because the media showed up like we had a raid going on, and they were reporting, which wasn't the case at all, but it sure made for a little excitement. So, no, we haven't heard back from him, Mr. McGuire. Don't know if we will. Never for sure, but we haven't heard back from him. If one additional thing, continue to be asked to update on some of our capital projects, and in particular City Hall, and really exciting yesterday is that they poured the floor. Huge pour. Started bright and early before sunrise, I think about 5 o'clock in the morning, and reported that after sunset they were still out there finishing up. So it was a long day, but we now have a floor out at our new City Hall. Everything else is.
I hope it's a foot above freeboard.
Yes. Should have the walls poured within the next week or two, and so. Sometime in March, we're expecting to see the walls go up. And this, with the tilt walls, we've said before, no building one day and buildings there the next day, kind of thing. So, everyone else is in our capital programs moving along. That's all I have to report tonight, Mayor.
Thank you, very much. Mr. Vice Mayor.
Move to adjourn.
We are adjourned. Thank you for your participation.